appreciated so much Dan Manuel's presentation, or is it Danny? He did a lot of good for us. It is no wonder that he has held over 300 meetings because of the powerful way in which he presents the gospel. I've held over three myself. I have to admit that when I found out what my topic was for tonight on Lot, I said, now what can I scrape up, on him? And I want you to know that there's a lot more on Lot than I thought, and I really enjoyed studying about it a lot. As a matter of fact, I thought about that again as I came off the parking lot in here. It's quite a name. There's a lot of different ideas about the name Lot. But he's Abraham's nephew. That's how we really know him. And he's the son of his brother Haran, H-A-R-A-N. And we first come into contact with him, as a matter of fact, in chapter 11 of the book of Genesis. And in that chapter, we learn about Terah, who is the father of Abraham, but also of Nahor and Haran. And we're told in verse 27, it said, this is the genealogy of Terah. Terah begot Abram, Nahor, and Haran, and Haran begot Lot. The reason Lot is, of course, focused on right there is because of the role that he will play in the chapters that succeed in the book of Genesis, all the way through chapter 19. And what to follow at least a little bit of the travels and so forth, the early part, we notice that Haran died in the Ur of the Chaldees. That's in chapter 11, verse 28. While they're still in their home territory, Ur of the Chaldees, that's where Haran died. And he left behind the son, Lot, and two daughters, Milcah, and she became Nahor's wife, and Iscah. That's in verse 29 of the 11th chapter. And then we find that from there we begin to develop the idea of the relationship between Abraham and Lot. It almost looks as if Lot, who lost his father, fatherless Lot, began to bond with sonless Abraham. We're told in verse 30, as a matter of fact, that Sarai was barren and she had no child. Of course, subsequently, she would. But here is Lot without a father, and here is Abraham without a son. And they more or less travel together. I might stop at this point and mention that the name Lot, which is just L-O-T, of course, they're not absolutely sure, the scholars aren't, about the derivation of the term or what it might mean. We know that many of the names, especially in the Old Testament, have a special meaning. Abram itself simply means exalted father, and later on means the father of many people, Abraham, when it's changed there. But anyway, the name Lot seems to refer to covering, a covering, and to envelop something, to wrap something up closely. And then it leads to the idea of control, tight control, or keeping in check. We'll refer back to that in a few minutes because it may have some significance for Lot. But anyway, Abraham and Lot, they begin to travel together, and this goes and leads up finally to where they part. But I want to kind of look at the events all the way to the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah. Now, Terah took Abram and Lot and Sarai to the city of Haran. And, of course, that city is the same name as one of Terah's sons. Then Terah died there. This is in chapter 11, verses 31 and 32. So they left Haran, Abraham and Lot and Sarai, and came into the land of Canaan. And that's in chapter 12, verses 4 and 5. But God had made a threefold promise we almost all have heard of many times probably to Abraham, namely that he would give him a land, this land called Canaan, that of him, his seed, he would make a great nation, and that through his seed, all the nations of the earth would be blessed. And I know when we used to teach Genesis, we would point out the fact that the first two are really the story of the Old Testament and the fortunes of that nation on that land and what happened to them. And the third one is fulfilled in the New Testament with the coming, of course, of Jesus Christ. But we find that that promise had come to Abraham while he was still in Mesopotamia, in the Ur of the Chaldees. And that's brought out by Stephen, interestingly enough, in Acts chapter 7, verses 2 and 3, where he makes it clear that the promise made to Abraham was before he ever went and traveled up to Haran. But anyway, Abraham, or Abram as he's still called here, Sarai, and Lot then go down into Egypt in the time of famine. And this takes us into chapter 12, verse 10. And then they return to the south part of Canaan, the promised land, after that incident, of course, about Pharaoh and Sarai. I won't go into that story, but you know that's where Abraham said that Sarai, his wife, was his sister. That's an interesting story in itself, but not germane to what we want to do. Now, the next thing we learn in chapter 13 is that both Abraham and Lot prospered. Genesis chapter 13, 2 and 5. Verse 2 says, Abram was very rich in livestock, in silver and gold. And verse 5 says, Lot also, who went with Abram, had flocks and herds and tents. Came across an interesting thought when we were studying in Bible class over at Farmersville, Luke 15. And it tells the story of the rich man and Lazarus. And we're trying to make the point that just being rich itself doesn't really condemn you. It's the fact that he kept the riches to himself and so forth. We tried to bring that out. And in order to demonstrate the fact that just being rich is not a sin, it is interesting that when Lazarus died, he is pictured as being in Abraham's bosom. And Abraham, in his life, was rich, a rich man. And this, of course, is important for the simple fact that being both rich and having lots of cattle and not having room together, they had to separate because of the greatness of their possessions. They both had tremendous possessions, Abraham and Lot, but they had to leave each other. And what one of the reasons was because a strife was developing between the herdsmen of Abraham and the herdsmen of Lot. And the statement is made then, for we must please let there be no strife, he says in verse 8, between you and me and between my herdsmen and your herdsmen, for we are brethren. They were brethren. You know, I wondered a little bit about this when I went over into chapter 14. And sure enough, the statement is made to the effect that Chedorlaomer had kidnapped Lot, and Abraham learned of it, he referred to his to Lot, who was really his nephew, as his brother. That's in verse 14, and then it comes out again in 16, where it said he brought back all the goods, and he brought back his brother Lot. Interesting, isn't it, that he's twice called that way. And yet in verse 12 of that 14th chapter, it said they also took Lot, Abram's brother's son. And that's correct, of course. But interesting that in the next two verses, he calls him his brother, or he's referred to as Abraham's brother. But he says here in verse 8, we be brethren. And we shouldn't have strife. And so what they did is they separated, as you know. Lot chose for himself all the plains of Jordan in chapter 13, verse 11. And he dwelled in the cities of the plain, settling in Sodom. That's in chapter 13, verse 12. And it said of this city that the men were exceedingly wicked and sinful against the Lord. Exceedingly sinful and wicked against the Lord. But as I indicated already in that 14th chapter, there was a necessity to retrieve Lot, who was kidnapped, when Chedorlaomer, a Mesopotamian king in coalition with three others, came into the territory around the Dead Sea, especially on the eastern side, where you have the cities of the plain. And they, of course, include Sodom and Gomorrah and Admah and Zeboim and Zoar. Those five are the ones that are mentioned in verse 5 of chapter 14. And it seems that Chedorlaomer was the leader of the four kings that came to punish them. Kings of the cities around the Dead Sea, as we said, in Canaan, they had served these other kings from the east in Mesopotamia, northern Mesopotamia, for a period of 12 years, but they rebelled the 13th year. So the 14th year, Chedorlaomer led the coalition against them to punish him. And the result was they also conquered the king of Sodom, and the battle seemed to happen at the bottom of the Dead Sea, in the Vale of Siddim, as it's called. And Lot was kidnapped along with all of his goods, and Abraham had to, as we say, retrieve him. Verses 4 and 5 bring it out. 12 years they served Chedorlaomer. Notice he singled out of the four kings. And in the 13th year, they rebelled. And so in the 14th year, Chedorlaomer and the kings that were with him came and attacked the various cities, and the result was that Lot was kidnapped. But he was, of course, retrieved. And this, of course, when that happened, had to be retrieved. It's interesting that coming back from the victory over the kings of Mesopotamia, including Chedorlaomer, was when Abram met Melchizedek, a priest of God, king of Salem. And he brought bread and wine in verse 18. He was a priest of God Most High. And he blessed him and said, "Blessed be Abram of God Most High, possessor of heaven and earth, and blessed be God Most High, who has delivered your enemies into your hand." And of course, as you know, in the book of Hebrews, there's developed the relationship between Melchizedek and also Jesus Christ, whose priesthood is after that order, not the order of Aaron, the Aaronic priesthood. But that's one of the interesting things in that incident in chapter 14. Now, next we come to the most important, of course, of the incidents in the life of Lot, and that's when the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah took place, recorded in the 19th chapter of the book of Genesis. That's where the story is told, particularly. We can't go to all the preparation before it in chapter 18, take up too much time. But let me mention that we especially look at the fact that Lot met in the first 11 verses of the 19th chapter the two angels, who were really two in the form, apparently, of two men, who came not only to tell Sarah that she was going to have a child, even though she was very old, and that's where Sarah laughed. And when she was confronted with that, remember, she denied she had laughed. Yes, but you did laugh. But anyway, she couldn't believe that she was going to have a child. But those two men went over to see if it was true about Sodom and the cities of the plain and their wickedness. And he meets these two angels, or two men, in the first 11 verses of chapter 19, meets them at the gate. Now, what happened, of course, is Lot flees Sodom with his wife and his two daughters. Right at this point, I just want to point out about the fact they were told that the city was going to be destroyed, and so they're going to leave. Now, the thing that's interesting here at the beginning, and we'll look at it again briefly near the end of our presentation is the fact that they had to be led out by the hand by the two men or angels who, you know, take them by the hands and really almost drag them out of the city. There was a reluctance, obviously, to leave the city. But they did because of course, God's mercy, particularly on Lot. And so presumably in this, I said Lot went with his two daughters. Presumably Lot's sons-in-law stayed there, because in verse 14, it says at chapter 19, "So Lot went out and spoke to his sons-in-law who had married his daughters and said, 'Get up and get out of this place, for the Lord will destroy this city.' But his sons-in-law seemed to them to be joking. And they didn't take it seriously, the warning. Presumably, they perished in the destruction of the two cities. Now, Lot and his family flee to Zoar. That's one of the cities of the plains. And God destroys Sodom and Gomorrah and the cities of the plain, which I mentioned before from chapter 14, verse 2. They would be Sodom, Gomorrah, Adma, Zeboiim, but excluding Zoar, because that's where Lot fled with his family. And in 19 and verse 29, you have this verse. It said, "It came to pass when God destroyed the cities of the plain that God remembered Abraham and sent Lot out of the midst of the overthrow, for when he overthrew the cities in which Lot would dwell." By the way, my topic on Jonah comes up Sunday morning, and the word overthrow here is used in Jonah's message of Nineveh, when he told him that their city would be overthrown. But anyway, same word, a kind of a rare word, but meaning to overthrow. But God did overthrow the cities. Lot got out because of, really, God's feeling toward Abraham. And that's what verse 29 seems to say. And then we're told that the cities were destroyed in verses 24 and 25. It said, "The Lord rained brimstone and fire on Sodom and Gomorrah from out of the heavens. So he overthrew those cities, all the plain, all the inhabitants of the cities, and they grew, that and what grew on the ground." One of the interesting things is that it's almost a certainty now that the cities of the plain have been located, and Sodom has been excavated, especially during the 70s. You know, at first they thought that the destruction of those cities were in the southern tip of the Dead Sea, that is now covered by water, but wasn't in the days of Abraham. It is true that using sonar equipment, they were able to detect trees down there in that lower part called the Gor, right above the Gor, G-H-O-R, which is the place where all the asphalt, gas, and petroleum is, that probably furnished the material for the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah. But anyway, they did see trees standing up 23 feet tall, indicating that a place that is now arid was at one time very fertile. And why Lot wanted to choose that area to go when he separated from Abraham. But those cities were really on the eastern coast of the sea, of the Dead Sea. And Bob Ed Dwar is the one that is identified as Sodom. And it's very interesting that they discovered hundreds, an enormous cemetery, and a 23-foot wall that had gone around that city. Most of this excavation was during the 1970s. And anyway, they found a huge cemetery, and they found mud brick homes called charnel houses that were burned from the inside out, indicating that, and the evidence indicated that a terrible fire of some kind came from above, crashed through the roof inside the homes and burned from the inside out, which is exactly what would go in harmony with what is said when God rained fire and brimstone, sulfur, on these plains. The Gore, which is just south of the Dead Sea, it's called the Gore, G-H-O-R, has great deposits of asphalt, petroleum, natural gas. In fact, when you go around there, it smells like sulfur. And it has been speculated that this is the means that God used to destroy the cities of the plain. And that is that perhaps lightning or something like that struck it, and there'd be a huge explosion, and then the destruction would rain down from the heavens. In any case, of course, it's a miracle, all right, because of not only of the timing of it, but the fact that God often uses natural means sometimes to achieve what we call or think of as a miraculous event. And this certainly was a miraculous event, but quite probably because of what's in the area, probably natural means. By the way, there are great salt deposits there too, which would help us to understand salt coming down and causing Lot's wife, the Jews, later Jewish traditions, call her Edith. I don't know if anyone's Edith in our group tonight, but the Jewish tradition calls her Edith, Lot's wife, that turned into a pillar of salt. But Lot and his daughters went to Zoar, and then they left Zoar and went into the mountains and in a cave, and probably the mountains of Moab, which of course is to the east of the Dead Sea. And that's probably where they went. We're told that Lot was afraid. He didn't want to continue to dwell in Zoar. He had asked to be able to go there, and God said he would not destroy that city along with the others of the cities of the plain. But anyway, in spite of God's promise in chapter 19, verse 21, he got out again. Could this indicate his faith was weak? That even though God told him, I won't destroy the city, he got a little bit nervous when he saw the rest of them all being destroyed. But in any case, he went with his daughters to the cave. And of course, this is one of the sorriest incidents in his life when, because their own husbands, his daughters' husbands, had remained in Sodom and obviously were killed, destroyed, they got their dad drunk with wine and lay with him. And the result was the birth of Moab and Ben-Ammi, or Ammon. And they, of course, became the head of the countries of Moab and Ammon. Now, there's some interesting, very interesting references to these events that have to do with the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah, Lot himself, and Moab and Ammon, in the rest of the Old Testament in particular. And it's really quite amazing just how many times these things are referred to. One of the best is in Deuteronomy 2, and I'm going to go over these fairly rapidly and just say something rather than read them all, just indicate what they say. But in Deuteronomy chapter 2, verses 9 and 19, it is pointed out that for Lot's sake, Moab and Ammon were not to be disturbed in their inherited land when Joshua came with Israelites to inherit the promised land. Deuteronomy 2, 9 and 19. Why were Moab and Ammon? And yet they had not given bread and water to Joshua and those that crossed, that were in the wilderness and then crossed into the promised land. Why? For Lot's sake. Because they were, by his daughters, his sons. But in Deuteronomy 23, verses 3 and 4, we learn the fact that the people from Moab and Ammon in the days of Moses were not allowed to be in the assembly of Israel. They were excluded, according to Deuteronomy 23, 3 and 4. Yes, God, for Lot's sake, let him have their inherited land, but they were not allowed to mingle with Israel. In Deuteronomy 29, 23, there's again a reference to the stories, the cities, unnamed, Sodom and Gomorrah, being a lesson to Israel itself. And then in Psalm 83, verses 6 through 8, The children of Lot is an expression used there, and Moab and Ammon are pictured in a bad light in Psalm 83 as allied with Assyria against Israel. And yet, Moab and Ammon are still called in Psalm 83 the children of Lot. In Isaiah 1:9, let me just read it to you. Unless the Lord of hosts had left us a very small remnant, the prophet said, we would have become like Sodom, and we would have been made like Gomorrah. Remembered so long later, in the days of Isaiah, long after the destruction had taken place, it was still a city, an event to be remembered and to be compared with the wicked of other times, including God's own people. In Jeremiah 20 and verse 16, the cities which the Lord overthrew and did not relent. Again, of course, the cities of the plain that we've been talking about. In Lamentations, chapter 4, verse 6, Israel's punishment is said to be greater for her sins than that of, quote, the sin of Sodom, which was overthrown in a moment. In a moment. Because of God's judgment. In Ezekiel 16:48, neither your sister Sodom nor her daughters, says the prophet to his people, have done as you, Israel, and your daughters have done. Sodom and her daughters didn't do as badly as you. In Hosea 11:8, Hosea, the great prophet of love, how can I give you up, Ephraim? How can I hand you over, Israel? How can I make you as Adma? How can I set you like Zeboiim, two of the cities of the plain that perished with Sodom and Gomorrah? And then in Amos 4:11, I overthrew some of you as God overthrew Sodom and Gomorrah. One of the most interesting references is by our Lord himself in his personal ministry. When in the 17th chapter of Luke, verses 28 through 32, he had already given the example of how the people were taken by surprise in the days of Noah. And then he comes and says, likewise, it was also in the days of Lot. They ate, they drank, they bought, and they sold, and they planted, and they built. But on the day that Lot went out of Sodom, it rained fire and brimstone from heaven and destroyed them all. Even so will it be when the day of the Son of Man is revealed. And so here is a great example by our Lord himself talking about his second coming when he's going to be manifest. They will be like they were in the days of Lot. And the suggestion is they'll be a tide to the world and worldly pursuits, and not realizing that destruction was coming. The other famous reference, of course, is 2 Peter chapter 2, verses 6 through 8, when it talks about what God can do, both in saving and destroying. He said in verse 6, starting in the middle of a sentence, and turning the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah into ashes, condemn them to destruction, making them an example to those who afterward would live ungodly, and delivered righteous Lot, who was oppressed by the filthy conduct of the wicked. For that righteous man dwelling among them tormented his righteous soul from day to day by seeing and hearing their lawless deeds. Then the Lord knows how to deliver the godly out of temptations. He delivered Lot. Interesting how Lot is this way remembered. One of the things that disturbs people, though, when they read this passage in 2 Peter 2:8 is, should he be called righteous? He's called righteous Lot here in this passage. He's called that righteous man, and it says his righteous soul was vexed. Three times the word, the adjective righteous, to apply to Lot. Maybe it's because he was righteous in contrast to the other people of Sodom, who we said were grossly wicked, as already indicate. It's said that their sin was grave, and the outcry had grown so great that they ultimately had to be destroyed. And so maybe that's the reason. And if you remember, in Sodom, you could not find 10 righteous men. It would almost seem as the only one who could be called righteous was Lot. But here are some interesting things. Lot was oppressed. He was distressed by the filthy conduct of the wicked, tormented in his righteous soul by what he saw and heard. And God delivered him out of temptation, as he does for the godly like Lot. He knows how to deliver the godly out of temptation. Lot, for example, you see. Lot's resistance to evil, how did he do it? It suggests his name, doesn't it? Remember I told you early his name referred to control, keeping in check. Maybe that's what he did, living among all that wickedness and keeping himself so he could be called as righteous Lot. Maybe that's it. He kept himself in check. But I'll tell you what tonight, his character is morally questionable. True, he showed hospitality in a very fine way to those two men who were really angels, came to his house, and seeing about, of course, Sodom. And he was courageous, because he did try to protect his guests when the homosexuals of Sodom came and surrounded the house, and they demanded that Lot send out these two men so that they could abuse them. That was noble. Protect my guests. But with regard to his daughters, his two daughters, his offer, of course, was alarmingly repugnant, offering his two daughters to them instead of the two guests. He attempted to avoid sin by sin. That's what it really amounted to. He tried to avoid it by sin, sending his own daughters out there, offering that. And it might be said that his duty as a father ought to have surpassed, been more important than his duty to those guests. Should have been, definitely. Dalich, the Old Testament commentator, said, or referred to it, a grievous violation of parental duty. Lot is not to be admired for offering his two daughters to those men. And then, of course, he got drunk. He allowed his two daughters to get him drunk. They wanted to raise up seed. And so foolishly, he went into a stupor and allowed them to commit what we would call incest with their father. And it also seems that he was so attracted to Sodom himself, he had to really be rushed out of the city. They had to take him by the hand, Sodom. He didn't just go out there himself. Yes, he tried to get his son-in-laws to come, but they didn't come. But even he was very slow to go, and he was only saved because God was merciful to him. What lessons then are for us in this? We are like they were in a lot of ways, aren't we? And let's see if we can sound that a little bit here. First of all, it turned out that Lot made a poor choice in looking at that fertile plain, what was then a fertile plain, and then pitching his tent ultimately as far as Sodom. Was he lured by the rich land that he saw there? And maybe finally the idea of city life itself? I mean, after all, he's sort of like the Hebrew writer talking about Abraham dwelt in tents with Isaac and Jacob. So did Lot dwell in tents with Abraham. That was his life up until this time when they parted And he got a chance to go to the big city and city life, get out from under those tents. We too can do the same thing, I'm afraid. Lured to the brink of disaster, attracted by the wrong things in life. And sometimes we indeed are. We're like the prodigal son who couldn't wait to get away after he got his inheritance from his dad in Luke 15:13, and went away into a far country. Poor choice. Poor choice. Wasted everything he had. And then he began to be in want. And there's a famine in the land to make it worse. He came back, though, ultimately. In 1 John 2:15, love not the world, neither the things that are of the world. And if anyone loves the world, the love of the Father is not in him. And we're not to be attached to the world. And it seems that several evidences, this was exactly what was wrong with Lot. First of all, he made the wrong choice, as it turned out. I realize it may not have seemed that way to him at all when he first made it. But then he was reluctant to let go of it. And his wife, so reluctant, she looked back and turned into a pillar of salt. And there's another thing here, too. Sometimes we may get into a situation in life finding ourselves surrounded by the wicked as he was. He was surrounded daily by wickedness when he stayed there in the city of Sodom. And maybe we run into that. Maybe young people do sometimes at school. They get involved when children of their own age, but they may do wickedly. They may drink, take drugs, things like this. You may get that peer pressure. But when that happens, we need, of course, to try to maintain ourselves, our own integrity, as Lot did. Maybe it's the job you have, where you work. Maybe you've got problems. Maybe you're at a place where you hear a lot of swearing and cussing and things of that sort. It may cause you, if you're in such a situation, pain and maybe even sorrow. I think of Psalm 119 and verse 136, where he said that rivers of water run down from my eyes because they do not keep your law. Do you listen to people tell dirty stories, cuss, drink, have office parties, drinking, and so forth? Are you faced with that kind of a situation? And it may cause you pain. It may cause you sorrow to see this. Luke 19:41, it caused Jesus this. It said, now as he drew near, he saw the city. Of course, it's Jerusalem, and wept over it, wept over the sins he knew and what would become of that city. And what about Paul at Athens in Acts 17 and verse 16 when he said his spirit was provoked within him when he saw that the city was given over to idols? Lot was distressed and tormented in his soul of the wickedness that he saw. And so was the Apostle Paul at Athens. And so was our Savior, who according to John 1:14, as the Word came and dwelt among us, the Word became flesh. And when he dwelt among us, he dwelt among a great deal of sin. And it broke his heart. The church in Pergamos, where Satan's throne was, that's where the church was. Where Satan's thrown us. And in the same passage in Revelation 2:12-13, it says where Satan dwells, where his throne was, that's where he dwelled. And yet he said to them, you hold fast my name. Present tense, by the way. You are holding fast my name and did not deny my faith even in the days of Antipas, my faithful witness who was killed among you. You held on. You held on. Lot hesitated to leave Sodom. Appears that some of his heart was still with that city, that big city life. He seems to have been there about 16 years. And he was distressed and tormented then, if he was there for 16 years. And by what he saw, One wonders, why did he stay there then at all? Well, that rhymed, didn't it? Why stay? Why stay through all that? If he was tormented by it, why didn't he go somewhere else? Maybe it was faith in his own ability to resist evil. Do you sometimes maybe feel that way? I'm strong. My faith is strong. I can handle this. But usually it's not a good idea at all. 1 Corinthians 15:33, Paul said, evil companionship corrupt good morals. It usually happens the other way. What about us? Maybe he thought to do them good by his own example. He wasn't doing those things. If I stay here among them, maybe my example will help. Have you thought maybe some way that that's true for you too? You know, Lot called them when these men came and surrounded his house wanting these two men. Lot called them brethren. My brethren, don't do this. And yet they were hostile toward him and even threatened him. But he was trying to say, my brethren, can't I have some influence on you? Sometimes maybe we think that if we stay even in a bad situation among the people who are doing wrong, that somehow we might, if we just wait a while, we'll be able maybe to have an influence and maybe even change them. And it raises this question to me, and I won't comment except to raise it. How long should a faithful brother stay with an apostate church? How long? Well, Lot, I guess, also once again proved the folly of drunkenness when he allowed his daughters to get him drunk. Noah did that, of course. And when Noah got drunk, he was naked, and his son Ham saw it. And the result was that Ham's descendants were cursed. Cursed be Canaan. And that was sad. And of course, we could go over to the book of Proverbs. I have it mentioned there. I was going to read all the passages about drinking and what it does to you and everything, but you don't need that. You know that drunkenness is wrong. Ephesians 5:18, Paul said, be not filled with wine wherein is riot, but be filled with the Spirit. In 1 Corinthians 6:10, listed drunkenness as one of the sins that people who are guilty of those sins will never see the kingdom of heaven. Never see it. Along with, as I say, many other sins. And leaving Zoar out of fear, as he did, does evidence perhaps a weak faith in Lot. And maybe he needs one of my favorite passages, the third chapter of Proverbs, verses 5 and 6. Trust in the Lord with all of your heart, and don't lean upon your own understanding. Acknowledge Him in all your goings, in all your ways, and He will direct your paths. Lot could have used that if he'd only put trust in the Lord. But instead, he left Zoar, went to the mountains into a cave, and was guilty, really, along with his daughters, of sin. Incest followed Lot's choice to leave Zoar. Lot, interesting, almost a contradiction. Kind of hard to assess. Kind of hard to justify when Peter called him righteous Lot, that righteous man, vexed in his righteous soul. He was, yes. Probably, as I say, because 10 righteous people couldn't be found, and he may have been the only one in comparison to all the others around him. But he had his weaknesses, weaknesses that we too will have and have to face in this life. But as God delivered him from temptation, so he can deliver us too, if we put our trust completely in God. I wonder if there might be somebody in our assembly tonight who's not yet a Christian, who's not yet put on Christ in baptism. Perhaps you're here and you do believe in Him with all of your heart, and perhaps you do repent of your sins, and you're ready this very night to confess what you believe in your heart, that Christ is the Son of God, and upon that confession, be buried with Him through baptism into His death and where the blood of Jesus would cleanse you from all unrighteousness. If you're ready to obey the gospel tonight, or if you have any other need that you might have, we invite you to come as we stand together and as we sing together.